This is absolutely 100% how ultra running and trail running brings out the wonder of youth. The wide open, the world is my oyster, running on the trail, not a care in the world, running as play. This topic is about how much there is to be gained, how much love and affection and joy there is in the simple act of putting one foot in front of the other and getting down the trail.
Welcome to the Trailhead of Trail Runner Nation, where we go for virtual runs with experts that teach us how to become better runners
and possibly better humans. So lace up your shoes and let's get going.
Today's podcast, we may use the term experts a little bit liberally because it's Scott and I and AJW, and we're doing Drop Bag. And it's always fun, Scott. We have a great conversation, and I can't even recap what it is because it was all over the place, but there was a lot of laughs.
The mornings are a little chillier. The leaves are turning colors. That means it's Socktober at Exoskin, and they want you to take advantage of their leg and arm sleeves. By going to exoskin.us, you can get 25% off those leg and arm sleeves for the month of October without a coupon, Freeman.
You know, the sun is a little later getting up, and that means sometimes I don't want to get up. But if I pull on a pair of leg sleeves and arm sleeves, it makes it doable. It makes it comfortable. You've got to layer up to make it happen. And you know what else has happened besides Socktober, Scott? They're taking 55% off selected men and women's shirts.
And if there's other normally priced items that you see on there, you can use the code TRN and get another 15% off. You shouldn't be paying full price at exoskin.us. This episode is brought to you by AG1 by Athletic Greens. They are the category leading superfood product that brings comprehensive and convenient daily nutrition to everybody. Now, green drinks traditionally, at least the ones that Don has tried to get me to try, taste like lawnmower clippings. They are not good. AG1 is different. It's nice and tasty.
And I'm glad you finally came over to my side of the table, Scott, and you've tried it because it does help you. And I've been yelling at you for years about how important it is for your immunity, your energy, your digestion, everything. And most importantly, Scott, your performance. And that's why I'm glad you're finally getting it.
AG1 is simple to use. It contains 75 vitamins, minerals, and whole food sourced ingredients. And you can try it with a special deal they're offering our Trail Runner Nation members. You get a free 1-year supply of vitamin D and 5 free travel packs if you go to athleticgreens.com/trailrunnernation. That's athleticgreens.com/trailrunnernation. Thanks for joining another edition of Trail Runner Nation. My name is Scott Warr.
I'm Andy Jones-Wilkins.
And I'm Don Freeman.
Don, are you going to announce the topic since you're the worst at explaining the rules to any of our games?
Absolutely. Well, this is one that we really love, and it comes under a few different names. It started out as Grab Bag, and it moved to a topic called Drop Bag. It went to Audio Magazine. Basically, they're all the same. Let me do my best to explain what it is. We have AJW along with us and Scott and I. We each come with two topics. We're going to throw the topic out there and we're going to discuss it, and it's going to be a good conversation.
Now, you know, it's too bad this is an audio podcast because it's just fun to watch Don explain what Drop Bag is without seeing him use his hands, because he's doing these circles in the air and kind of some kind of ASL sign language as he describes Drop Bag.
So what makes the Drop Bag so fun and unique is that we're actually physically going to reach our hands into the bag and describe an object, and then the other two people that are listening are going to guess the topic.
The funny part of this is if you've ever gone on done a race that you've had a drop bag, unless you're using one of those Victory Design drop bags that are super well organized, it's usually a mess in there. Unless you're really a type A and have everything in its own individual, you just reach in there trying to look for maybe a gel or trying to look for some lube, and you may pull out something completely different. You may reach in for you need Vaseline, and you pull out a gel, and you don't want to use that gel for what you were going to use the Vaseline for, right? That's no bueno.
Everything has its purpose and its place. And so I think that pretty much sums it up. Let's kick this thing off. We've got two each. I don't know what Scott has. I don't know what Andy has. I have no idea. But I know what I have, and they're going to be good. And we kind of smack talk a little bit before podcast. We've all three boasted on our topics.
Since Don, since you just self-proclaimed that you have good topics, why don't you start it off?
Good. Well, I did a lot of research as I was looking.
Yeah, I'm sure you did.
My topics. I lost some sleep. So if I look a little bit, you know, behind my normal game, it's because of my lack of sleep finding these great topics. So let's reach deep into this bag and look around. And here's what I feel, guys. I feel it's about the size of a bread box. All right. And it's actually, in fact, a box. It has a lid on it. I'm going to keep talking until you guys finally guess.
Well, it's a pair of shoes.
It is a pair of shoes. You got it early. I was even going to go with the tissue paper, and I was going to go a long ways with it.
I'm surprised you said the word bread box. I thought you were going to say it's about the size of a shoe box.
With the guys I'm working with, that might have helped. Okay, so I found this on marathontrainingschedules.com. I want to give credit where credit is due. Marathontrainingschedules.com, 45 mind-numbing facts, figures, and statistics about running. How could I miss on that, right? 45 things to choose from. And I had to scroll through until I got to 34 before I said, that's the one. And let me tell you what I read, and then let's talk about it, because I thought it was interesting. So I'm scrolling down to...
Does this have anything to do with shoes?
Yeah, stand by, War.
And aren't we... You're telling us the topic. We're supposed to guess it.
Oh, yeah. Scott did. He said running shoes.
Running shoes.
That's the topic?
It's a broad topic.
He's coming strong out of the gate, AJW. He's coming real strong.
Guys, I'm
because no one ever wants to talk about running shoes.
So here we go. I'm gonna read it verbatim. Okay. Wearing cheap running shoes lowers your risk of injury. Interesting. A researcher from the University of Bern analyzed 4,358 runners and found that shoes that cost over $95 had double the chance of injury than those who wore shoes that cost less than $40. The Medicine and Science in Sports and Exercise also had similar findings and further stated that runners who wore shoes with features like added cushioning were likelier to get injured. So I thought that was interesting.
Where can you buy a pair of running shoes under $40?
Well,
have you in the last 5 years seen a pair of running shoes under $40 that weren't used?
AGW, I'll let you hit that one out. I mean, I've got a store that starts with the letter W, perhaps, might have a few.
I'm not sure I'd call them running shoes, though.
I would actually call them safety shoes, because if it is costing $40 or less, you are on the safe side of injury. And so I had to think about that. I had to say, you know, well, wait a second. We've learned from Dr. Kukuzela and Dr. Maffetone and Ganjimi.
And Green.
And Green, about the more cushion, your body can't feel what's going on down there. You absorb a lot of the impact inside the shin or the bone or the muscle attachment at that spot. So you end up with shin splints. Your foot isn't doing its job. And so more impact to the knee. So maybe these high cushion shoes aren't good. So I thought that, and I'll throw that out to you. But I also thought, a guy that buys a pair of $40 shoes probably isn't doing a lot of running. And the person that's investing heavier in the $95 up is doing more running. So now I'm kind of lost. And I've really come to you two to help me decide which side of the fence to line up on here.
I think this officially marks the day that listeners no longer come to Trail Run and Pay.
Okay.
For good running advice.
Well, are you basing that on your answer here, AJW, or on my actual topic?
So if I understand this correctly, this study from the snake oil salesman somewhere in Bangladesh.
Let me stop you there. It's runningmarathonschedules.com.
And I'm sure Scott will put it in the show notes.
Yes.
You go there, and what they say is $40 or less, that's the key to no injuries.
Right.
Okay.
where are you going to go, right? I mean, there's the science. The science is right there. Almost, you know, 4,500 runners we're talking about. Science is solid. Can you help with this, Scott? Because AJW.
I'm thinking that the science and the math and the statistics involved in this study are terrible.
All right.
The one thing that I am considering, though, is the next time I go into the my local running store and I see the $150 pair of running shoes I want, I'm going to start negotiating. I'm going to say, you know what? I'll pay you $50 for those and see what they say.
All right. Our position on this is watch your running gait. And no matter what you run in, if you have a strong gait, you're probably going to be in good shape.
Yep.
All right. So there's nowhere to go but up at this point. And and we probably should have the editor move this, my piece, a little further into the show so we keep listeners.
No.
We started it out with a bang. That's
a bang is a crash, a plane diving into the ground. Go ahead. Who's next?
Let's go, Andy. Andy, you go.
Well, I want to say, Don, you made us guess the thing.
Yeah.
So I'm going to actually reach into the drop bag and tell you the thing I pull out. And then you're going to need to guess the topic that the thing represents. Okay.
And Andy, I just want to clarify, that's exactly the way I understood it too. So the guy who set the rules is the one who didn't understand what we were doing. You and I understood we were on the same path.
So two against one. I get it. You guys gang up on me. So we'll go your way.
I mean, first of all, who anymore has a bread box? Right? So if you reach in and pull out something the size of a bread box and it's like, oh, yay, running shoes. Then it's like, okay. So anyway, I'm going to reach down. I'm reaching deep down in, and I'm pulling out a small bottle of ibuprofen tucked into the back of this drop bag, somewhat controversially, but tucked into the bottom of this drop bag is a small bottle of ibuprofen, and the runner is so glad to have it. What's the topic?
I'm going to say that despite the recent, the last, 5 years where NSAIDs have been really demonized, that there is a place for ibuprofen. Maybe it's not the vitamin I where you're taking them on a daily basis or abusing that vitamin I, but I think there's a place for ibuprofen. That's my topic guess.
My topic guess is, you know, I'm going to say that you're going to go somewhere along the lines of medicine. And I'm going to say, hey, you've got two kidneys. Why worry about it?
You can live with one.
We've got two. There's a reason we have two. So I think that's where you're going.
Well, neither of you are right. This is kind of a hot button topic, and we could go for a long time on it. But listeners might know that just a couple of weeks ago, the organizers of UTMB, in partnership with Ironman, who we know are now partnering with them to create the Ultra Marathon World Series, announced that they would be testing for ibuprofen use, for NSAID use, and the use of NSAIDs within 7 days of any of their events counts as a doping violation.
Wow.
I don't know. I'm speaking of science. I don't know the science of how you test for NSAID use. And I know there's a lot of concern about NSAID use, but from my understanding, this is the first organized event, and it's a pretty big organized event, that has essentially banned the use of NSAIDs. We know that there are events that discourage their use, that don't have them on the aid station tables, and that tell people about their dangers, but to actually have a ban on ibuprofen and potentially penalize runners who test positive for ibuprofen use, I just think that's a very, very big deal. And I'm not exactly sure where it's going to go, but I think it is something that's worth paying attention to, because we know, regardless of the warnings, that people out there we'll pop a couple of ibuprofen, you know, late in the 100 miler to maybe take the edge off of their trashed quads or so forth. And now that could get you kicked out of UTMB if you do that.
Andy, would you consider ibuprofen as a performance enhancing drug? I don't know whether I would consider it performance enhancing.
I could argue that. Go ahead, AGW.
I don't know. I don't know either. And maybe it falls into a similar category of something like, let's just say, caffeine, which has sometimes been talked about as well, right? I think the idea of those two things, ibuprofen and caffeine, they prevent or they slow down performance degradation, right? Mm-hmm. Let's say you're right. If you're falling asleep and you take some caffeine and you wake up, technically that enhances your performance, because if you didn't take the caffeine, you'd go to sleep and your performance would go down, right? If your muscles are sore and you take some ibuprofen and it makes them feel better and you can go a little bit longer, theoretically that's a performance enhancing drug. But I think it's an entirely different category than, say, something like a steroid that clearly is providing an advantage that might not be accessible to anybody else in the event.
So clearly UTMB has decided that it is a PED, right? It's a performance enhancing drug. But where do you draw the line? It becomes very dangerous, where I could say my squirrel's nut butter is a performance enhancing agent, because without it, I'm chafing and I can't finish the race or near run near as fast because my legs are 4 feet apart. You could say the same thing with your caffeine or your Tylenol or just about maybe a pair of shoes that has too much cushion. I think maybe the marathon has done that with a certain weight of the shoe, with the compound made of the shoe. We have Tour de France saying, hey, the bikes have to weigh X pounds or it's too light and not allowed into the race. NASCAR does the same thing, only so much horsepower or something, certain kind of carburetor, if they're still using those. You know, you can look at every sport and find some spot where if you do one option or another, you could improve your performance. So I think it's a very interesting topic, and you probably should have brought it to a full episode, AJW, and not to a drop bag. Scott?
And I'm going to make one other leap. Maybe it's a large leap, but you know, there are people towing the line that are on prescription drugs to help with situations they may have, high cholesterol or high blood pressure or something like that. Are those going to be banned as well? And are they going to be tested for? I don't know.
Well, yeah, and there's a lot that went into this new announcement. I do know, related to people perhaps with chronic medical conditions, that you know, for years, the athletes have been able to apply for a therapeutic use exemption, a TUE. And a lot of these are around things like exercise-induced asthma and things like that, where they'll have an inhaler that will open up their breathing, their lungs, and so forth. And there are certainly some of those that are in this new list of banned substances. So I would agree. And Don, we could go ahead and say pacers are performance enhancing, right? We've debated pacers on this podcast before. Is my performance enhanced because you don't have a pacer? So we should ban pacers because they're performance enhancing. I think the slippery slope nature of it is really, really challenging. And because ibuprofen and NSAIDs in general have been proven in certain circumstances, taken in large doses, unchecked or unmanaged by a physician, I certainly understand the danger of them. But to ban them outright and to potentially penalize a runner or runners because of their use, I think is perhaps maybe a bit of an overreach on the part of the UTMB organizers.
Hmm. Yeah, and I want to go back over this therapeutic exemption. I mean, what if you had your doctor saying, absolutely, it's appropriate at this dosage level. There's no reason this person, they couldn't participate without it. So I'm giving the prescription for it. We're managing it. They're not overtaking it. It's still safe. Because you could say the same thing about perhaps testosterone. What if you're a low T person and you want to try to at least have what everybody else has in the middle of the bell curve? And so you get a therapeutic exemption for testosterone. Is that possible? Because that will definitely increase performance. And if you go down this slippery slope, you could justify that. So where does it end? I don't know. It's a very good topic, AJW. I'm glad it's almost as good as my original one about $40 shoes.
I was going to say, just like a trail run, sometimes you have lows and sometimes you have highs. We started at sea level. We went up to Mount Everest, and I feel like we're just cresting the hill and headed straight down to sea level with my topic. So I'm going to reach in my drop bag, and boy, there is just a ton of stuff at the bottom of this. But my hand is just gravitated to this one thing. So I'm going to grab it. I'm going to pull it out. And how did that get in my drop bag? It's the letter Q. The letter Q. That's silly. I'm going to throw that on the ground. I'm going to reach back in and I grab another thing.
He's spelling a word, AJW.
I pull it out. It's another Q. I have two Q's here. What is my topic?
You need to buy a vowel, my friend, because this is not spelling anything. What is your topic? Q. Quality and consistency. No, that's a C.
Andy, do you have a thought or a guess?
Questioning quitting.
Ooh, that is strong.
Yeah, let's change your topic.
I think I may pivot and go with that topic. No, here's a topic. You're both wrong. I didn't pull out one Q. I pulled out two Qs. So the topic is Qs. What are your running cues? When you're out on the trail, what are some of the running cues that you use to help you have better form or to run more efficiently? And I will start because I do this a lot now that Don won't run with me anymore and I'm out on the trail alone and I'm trying to improve my running form. And I have two specific cues that I use. And then we'll ask you what your maybe what one or two of your cues are. The one is, and I can't remember where I heard this, but is with the arms and moving the arms, the hip to nip.
That's Mark Cucuzzella.
And that is, as you're running, your hand should go from your hip to your nip. And I think that for some reason that helps me with cadence. It also helps me with my running form and standing up straight. So that is one of my cues. The other cue is from my good friend Don, and that is pretending like you're on a skateboard. So when your foot hits the ground, it's not hitting the ground in front of the skateboard. It's hitting the ground right underneath your center of mass. And then what do you do with it? Is you pull it back underneath you. So that's the other cue that I use. One, hip to nip. Number two is the skateboard cue.
I'm right. I was, as soon as you said we were going to do our own, mine, I don't really think of it as a skateboard, but to have your foot land as directly under you as possible and to almost be starting to go back when it hits the ground so that you're almost pawing at the ground. So one of my cues when I'm feeling like it's later in an event, maybe it's been 6-7 hours into it, is am I still pawing at the ground or am I starting to kind of pound into the ground?
That's a good one.
It's a cue of paw instead of pound.
That's a great visual, Andy. I like that. I'm going to use that.
And I'm going to go right with the same theme because we're all thinking about the same thing, contact to ground, right? You know, where your foot hits, what you do with it when it hits. And what I've done is there's a couple of people in front of me hiking if I'm going to be passing them running, right? So they're not passing runners, but they're hiking along and I'm in the dirt and sometimes gravel and I wait and see how long it takes for them to actually hear me. And no, I'm not trying to sneak up on them. But I know if I'm running silent, if I'm running quiet, I'm running efficiently. I'm not pounding the ground. And so I don't try to sneak up on anybody and I'm far off on the left-hand side, but I just watch to see, am I running efficiently? How quiet am I? Or am I pounding on the ground? Because that makes a big difference. So I use that as a cue for me.
So your cue is to be quiet, land softly.
Yes. Yep.
Because you don't always have a hiker in front of you.
No, I don't. And I can't catch the person that's running in front of me. So I have to look for hikers and walkers.
Andy, what other cues do you use besides the pawing the ground?
So in addition, and this is a form thing as well, but especially since I've had these two hip surgeries that I think most listeners on the podcast know, I will from time to time really kind of lose my way and swing back and forth. And one of the ways, and sometimes even favor one side of my body. So what one of the cues I use is, am I staying upright? And if I'm wearing, say, a sleeveless shirt or a tank top, I will often know that I'm getting out of form because one side or the other of the arm part will sag down over my shoulder. I know it seems weird, but that's what'll happen. You know, I'll just favor one side. And so I will constantly be asking myself, am I favoring one side? Am I especially if I reach for my sleeve and pull it up, it's like, oh, I must be leaning to the side, or I don't lean to one or the other side more, but I do tend to do that and favor one side versus the other from time to time. And I'll just pay attention and be like, oh, is my sleeve falling off? Get it back up, stay more upright. Keep your posture good. Keep going forward.
Gosh, we're all hitting on some similar things, because the next one I was coming up with, and I know they reflect both of what you are saying, is posture. Am I leaning forward? Do I look like Shaggy on Scooby-Doo when I'm running? Or is my head, my shoulder, my hip, my knee, my ankle, are they all in alignment? Because, yeah, you're supposed to have a bit of a forward lean when you run, but you know, not to that degree where gravity's pushing down on your back and trying to punish you by putting your face in the dirt. You need to be upright because your spine has three natural curves. You act more like a spring. If your spine is in a C shape, you're not as efficient. So I try to think about body mechanics, and I think about, and if I'm trying to run faster, I think about, you know, the foot not being a shuffler, but more the heel coming towards the buttocks that Dr. Cucuzzola talks about. So I try to really tune in to posture and position of thighs and those types of things.
That's good. We're going to send Andy out to hydrate himself while we talk about Jonji. Jonji just released their third drop of the fall winter collection that's based on the American Southwest, with great pieces focused on transitioning to the cold weather.
Included in the release is a thermal Zephyr runner jacket. It's weightless, insulated, warmed as we head into the shorter days and colder weather. It only weighs a whopping 5.9 ounces and is packable and easy stowing.
With each purchase, they donate 2% of sales to clean water. With the fall winter American Southwest collection, they've partnered with Dig Deep to provide and install running clean water in households in the Navajo Nation.
TRN listeners can get 15% off with the code TRN15. That's TRN15. Now back to Andy.
Okay, time to open up your drop bag there, Freeman.
I'm going with I'm really not sure how the rules go, so I'm just going to reach in and start feeling things. And when you guys figure out my topic, you can just report on it. All right. So I'm reaching in this bag, and I'm looking around, and I see a bottle of ibuprofen. Don't need that. I've got these ridiculous letters Q that are kicking around in there, and I'm pulling out a headband, pulling out a wristband, and here's a whole set of athletic leggings and a top with three stripes going down the side of the leg. I got knee-high socks that no one's going to see because I'm wearing these athletic sweatpants. Come on, guys. I'm running out of stuff.
Freeman, if this is my topic, I'm going to scream at you because this is exactly what I was going to pull out next.
Really?
Was exactly what you were saying.
Let's go straight to you, and then I'll come back at the end. I don't mind coming on second.
No, I'm going to guess what your topic is.
Okay.
And I'm going to guess what my topic is and see if it's the same thing.
Okay, go.
Jogging.
Mm-hmm. It is.
And coming to grips with the term jogging.
That's exactly what I did. Let's talk about it together. Let's do a combined.
Did we talk about this?
No, we did not.
Wow.
So let's talk about it. Let's both team up. AJW, you'll have to kind of be the referee for this and jump on in. But give me your first pitch about jogging and running, and then I'll give my slant because it'll be fun to compare.
Well, it was Dr. Maffetone. He was on last week, and a number of times he referred to running as jogging. And for some reason, I take offense to that word jogging. And I remember way back before I was a runner, I worked with a lady that was a marathon runner. And I remember going to her one day and I said, so you're going for a jog this afternoon? And she stopped me cold. I thought she was going to punch me in the nose. And she said, I don't jog, I run. And that's been with me this whole time. And now that I'm a runner, I take offense when people say jogging. And so I went to the dictionary and looked up the word jogging. And this is the definition: to run at a slow trot, to go at a slow, leisure, or monotonous pace, trudge. Running at a slow, regular pace, usually over a long distance as part of an exercise routine. It sounds like I'm a jogger.
Well, no, I think most of us, I think the point is probably most of us during our longer events are joggers. We probably fit that precisely, but we are in denial.
Yeah.
And so since we're combining here, you know, you don't look at a license plate frame and it says a 50K jog. It's a 50K run, 50 mile, 100K. They're all runs. No one would wear a belt buckle with the word jog on it. Nobody. Or a shirt. So I think we all take offense to it. And I think that's why it makes this topic fun, is because universally we're on the same page.
Andy, do you take offense when someone calls you a jogger?
No, but just imagine if the belt buckle said, congratulations on finishing the Western States walk.
Ooh.
Right, because all of us have been at the last third of a 100-mile race, and let's face it, if we're strong enough to jog, I mean, we're going to be loving life. So no, I don't take offense with the term jogging. I do think though, I loved what Don was pulling out of the drop bag there, because there's a certain regalia that goes along with jogging. That might include, say, for example, $35 shoes from Walmart. Right?
You see, I'm on the same theme all the way through.
Right. Whereas you can go and get if you're going to buy a pair of $180 Hokas, by golly, you're running. You're not jogging.
Hey, I've got a few more definitions. So, like you, Scott, I was kind of looking around, and I went to the more reliable sources like Reddit and things like that, where people. People weighed in. You went to a dictionary that has been published since probably 1840, right? But not me. So I went and I saw two different definitions of jogging, running. And one expert said, well, anything that is under 10-minute pace is running, and over 10-minute pace is jogging. I said, okay. And then I went to and found another self-proclaimed expert that didn't use 10 minutes, but he said anything under 8 minutes is running and over 8 minutes is jogging. And I thought, well, that man is much faster than me, because I was stretching it on the 10-minute mark. I'm thinking, you know, that's
good grief.
Yeah. I continued to look through the Reddits and the different sources, and it said, we have to think about pace, right? But then we also have to think about form. Because a runner has a certain look and a jogger has a certain look, not just the uniform that we choose to wear. A running is any gait in which your feet are both off the ground at the same time, as opposed to jogging, where you always have at least one foot on the ground. I thought that was an interesting gait perspective to look at.
I'm just going to make a little input here. You know, it wasn't that long ago that we watched the Olympics, and one of the events in the Olympics is race walking. Which the definition of walking is having one foot on the ground at any given time. You're never in the air. And those guys can go at speeds up to 6-minute miles.
Yeah, very fast.
So they're moving.
Yes, they are.
So they even though they're walkers, they could be considered by your silly Reddit definition as runners.
So like anything, you know, not one definition can define something. So this is like a mosaic. You know, you put all these puzzles, all these together, and you'll come up with a very strong definition. And here's another one: competitive. From that angle, people that jog are less serious about improving their speed or entering competitions. They're out there just recreationally enjoying. And once you decide, it doesn't matter how fast you are in this definition, once you decide that you want to become a little bit faster, or you're even, if you even have a watch And you're not just trying to get to work on time or through your lunch hour. You have a watch because you want to compare and see if you're improving. Then you're a runner. We'll accept that as a running definition. Another one on Reddit. Somebody wrote, quote, "Jogging sounds wimpy." I said, well, you know, and that's where I stopped. I said, you know what? You're right. Jogging does sound wimpy. And for all the reasons that you can put, all the science and form and competitive and pace, it just sounds wimpy to me. You and I, Scott, we combined on the same one. I think that's fun.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Scott, you really had that? You had jogging also?
Yeah, I have a backup though, so we don't need to.
What were you going to pull out to be symbolic of the topic?
I was going to pull out a silk tracksuit that had matching three lines on the sleeve of the Ooh. Arms and sleeve of the pants, with a little bit of a bell bottom shape on the pants. A velour suit is what I was going to pull out.
Isn't that amazing that that's so much of like the ubiquitous symbol of a jogger versus a runner?
Hey, are we describing Will Ferrell in some skit that he's done on SNL?
No, it's Chevy Chase where he was 6 foot, 6 foot five with the fro.
I don't know.
It's on Fletch. It's a movie, Freeman.
I haven't seen it, no.
Oh, my gosh.
So who's next? I think it's AJW, yeah.
Let's move beyond jogging.
All right, this one's not quite as serious as the ibuprofen one, but I'm going to reach in there and tucked underneath the three-striped pants and Don's bread box is a laminated course map.
Ooh.
With the race course highlighted with little X's at the various aid stations along the way, and then a little legend at the bottom that the distances between each aid station.
I've got it. And I'm pretty confident in this, Scott, and you can welcome to join me on my side like you did on the jogging term. I think we're talking about the advantages that are offered today with GPS watches, of being able to track a course and know. Back in the day when we started, gentlemen, you had to really know something. You had to recognize flags and you had to follow these simple flags on this single track. There was risk out there, but now you can always look at your watch and see if you're on the course or not. So I think that's where you're going.
I'm going to diverge a little bit from that. I'm going to say it has nothing to do with GPS watches, but it has everything to do with...
So Scott, that's not a little bit diversion, okay? That's right. Like completely 180.
I flipped the coin completely over 180 degrees.
Yeah.
And this comes from an experience I had this morning. There's a race that is going on sometime. They just recently marked this course. And I was surprised at how much markings there were. I mean, there were ribbons on a single track without any other paths going off to the side. And there was more chalk being used than in a classroom at AJW's school, and surveying tape. And I was just thinking, who is this stupid that can't follow a simple map? Back in the day when you had to use a map and a compass and take a little bit of ownership on getting from point A to point B, rather than just relying on the course markings. That was a long topic. Sorry, AJW, but I think I'm on the mark.
AJW, we're out of time for your topic. Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, in a way, both of you guys have blended. It's not about how great GPSs are, but it's also not about how much better things were in the old days. The topic is, as ultra runners, as people who sign up for races or go out for long runs or long training runs, I think we sometimes lose sight of the big picture, that we're just going from one tree to the other tree or one junction to the other junction. And so this course map with the entire loop labeled with each aid station and the mileages is in between is meant to be a reminder that, you know, you're running this entire event. You're not just putting your hand down and doing what your watch says. You're not just blindly following the 100 ribbons that the person put up, but you're really participating in a holistic event. And reading a map is a skill you need. and understanding what you're going to get out of the aid stations is a skill you need, and understanding what it means to have 6 miles and 2,000 feet of vertical between point A and point B. These are skills that you need to know in the sport. And I think it's important for new runners in particular to have a sense of that. And so the map is symbolic of that.
AGW, when you run from one aid station to the next, because we all do, I mean, because that's part of what happens, do you have the mileage and the elevation climb in your head as you're going through? Is that both equally important to you?
Yes, only those things though. I try to have, you know, okay, it's 6.2 miles and it's going to be 1200 feet up and 400 feet down. Right, because typically the aid stations are higher or low. Because you could have a 6 mile stretch where most of it's downhill, and of course you could have a 6 mile stretch where most of it's uphill. So I try to do the math in that regard and just say between each aid station, this is how far it is, this is how much you go up, and this is how much you go down. What then course knowledge, you know, or if you talk to people who've done the race before, the other intangible might be, is it rocky and rooty? Is it nice and smooth? Is it really narrow single track? Is it double track? Is it going to get dark when you're on the way? Those are other intangibles. But I think just think having the simple, this is how many miles it is, this is how much you go up, this is how much you go down, is good enough, at least for planning how long it'll probably take you.
Yeah. And I add a third one in there, the distance up, down, but knowing how many climbs comprise this up, are they rollers that add up? Because the rollers add, but if you say I have 2 large climbs and that's where most of my elevation gain or loss is, that helps me too. So I think those are the big three.
Oh, that's a really good point too, right? You could cover 1,000 feet in 1,000-foot things or one big 1,000-foot thing.
Mm-hmm. Which would you rather do?
Oh, me? I'd much rather do 1,000s these days.
Ah, really? How about in 2005?
1,000.
Okay.
You know, I'm also remembering stories that Don used to tell me about the goats of the industry or goats of the trail that would say, you know, from this point to this point should take you 43 minutes.
That's before GPS. Dana Gard, he was a local runner in the Auburn area. AGW, your time out here, you probably know exactly who he is, and he's a legend. And he would know, you could drop him anywhere. He would recognize the landscape, recognize that rock, that tree that bent over to the right. And there, he would know how long it would take you to get to wherever you were. And it was just amazing and so useful. And you can imagine before GPS, you would have to have that kind of course knowledge if you really wanted to own that course.
Yeah. All right. Last topic. Is that me?
Yeah. And we're saving the best for last. So you really better come strong, War.
Okay. I'm reaching down and you know what? I'm feeling like most people in their drop bags, they have little motivational things.
Ooh, yeah.
And, you know, photos of family or friends or whatever, or children. And I'm going to pull out, I pull it out and it's a photo. It's a photo of a young child. Their eyes are wide open, very open. And their eyebrows are raised and their mouth is just gasping open. So it's a picture of a young child with its eyes wide open and its mouth wide open.
Well, no. First, before anybody guesses, AJW, let's just talk for a second. Somebody that comes with just an optional one at the end, this really sounds good. I would have led with this or at least had it for my second one before just leaving it in the bag and not even pulling it out. I really like the sounds of it. Not sure where it's going. I have a couple ideas, but I think I'll let you guess first, just in case I like it and I can say it's mine like Scott did.
This is absolutely 100% how ultra running and trail running brings out the wonder of youth. The wide open, the world is my oyster, running on the trail, not a care in the world, running as play. This photo of the child with his mouth wide open and his eyes wide open, just taking in whatever the world gives him. This topic is about how much there is to be gained, how much love and affection and joy there is in the simple act of putting one foot in front of the other and getting down the trail.
That's a wrap.
I quit. I quit. You know, both of my topics that I've come with, Andy has come up with better topics than I did. Andy, nope, that you're wrong. Don?
Oh, gosh. I was in agreement with Andy because that sounded good. But no, hold on. I think it's simply just never forget how beautiful it is out here and the views. Just don't always look at your feet or the dust or concentrate on the pain in your blister that just formed. It's amazing out here. Don't forget that. Enjoy that.
You know, actually, my topic is very close to both of yours. And it comes from a podcast I was listening to not long ago, and they referenced an article, and of course this will be in the show notes. There's no question it wouldn't be in the show notes, but it's an article from Psychology Today, and they described in this podcast I was listening to something called the awe walk, and I have spun this into being the awe run. And this article in Psychology Today talked about some studies that explored the power of these awe walks. And an awe walk is a stroll in which you intentionally shift your attention outward instead of inward. So you're not thinking about the tight deadline, the unfinished project, the strain in your relationship, concerns about the coronavirus, any of that. Instead, you're turning your attention outward. And I think that this is something that I've done intentionally over the last week, where I run the same trails. And I've intentionally looked at the trail a little bit differently, trying to find a new tree, trying to find the leaves are changing right now, right? Looking at the leaves and really intentionally looking outward instead of what's going on inward. Is my heart rate too high? Am I running at the right pace? Am I going to get back to the trailhead in time to make my morning meeting like I missed this morning, Don? You know, those kind of things. So it's about the awe walk, or in this case, the awe run.
I think that's perfect, AJW. I think Scott was playing like some four or five dimensional chests on us. I think that he had this all along. I think he just jumped onto my jogger thing to make it look like he didn't have anything at the end. And then bam, he drops the awe walk on us. I just love it.
Yeah. I think you did a little Jedi mind meld there too. Yeah. I mean, that is a fascinating topic. I was thinking that as you were talking about how you've been running the last week or so, I did one of the first ever timed races I've ever done, a 12-hour race last weekend, and it was over a 1-mile loop, and it wasn't flat. It was winding and twisting, turning on this very pastoral sort of Pennsylvania farm. And I actually ended up doing that over as it got to like 30 miles and 40 miles, and just looking at the way the light is hitting that tree a little differently than it did a couple of hours ago, or how this part that was in bright sun an hour ago is now in shade, and how this part of the trail that was really nice and dry is now a little bit muddy. Like, I think that awe walk, or in our case, awe run, can really take on a lot of forms and can open ourselves up to experiencing a run in a way that's very different than we typically do, especially for those of us who've been running for, you know, most of our lives. So I love that. That's really a great topic to wrap things up with, War. You've outdone yourself. I mean, we started with Don's bread box, you know, and we finished with the awe walk.
Well, and I will put a little teaser, a little cliffhanger on there. If you go to the show notes and click on that Psychology Today article, they did studies on awe walks where they took a controlled group. Half the group did intentional awe walks and the other ones did just normal walks. And the positive changes mental and psychological changes that the people with the awe walk had over just the people that were out there walking was it's pretty amazing. So go out there and have some awe runs this week, right?
Hey Scott, which podcast is that? And if you don't know it off the top of your head, can you put it in the show notes? I think someone would enjoy listening to the full episode on that.
I can't remember which one it was right off the top of my head, but I'll find it.
Knowing how much all the listeners just pour over the show notes, it'll be easy.
You know, I met a runner that he didn't even know that we did a podcast. He thought we just did show notes and just absolutely loved it. And
there's an audio portion of this.
He didn't even know it.
Hey, thanks, guys. This was a fun drop bag. We hope that you organize your drop bag just a little bit better next time, because it's going to make you quicker at those aid stations.
And nothing as big as a bread box, because they only allow certain sizes in your for a drop bag. You know, it's got to fit someplace. So that will use up a lot of useful space.
Now you can go return that bread box to your mom.
You've got that velour suit with the stripes on it and everything. There's not a whole lot of room for any bread in there.
I always enjoy these conversations. It was a lot of fun. The preparation was obvious. I mean, there's a reason we can only do these and produce these over a certain period of time, because it takes so much work to go out and find our topics, pour over them, sketch them out. I mean, I whiteboard this thing, you know, 3 months out.
Oh, I got to say, Malcolm Gladwell has nothing on us with our research.
The 10,000 hours we're talking about?
Yeah.
Talk about the midnight oil that we've burned on this podcast.
For everyone out there, you just got double the value of what you paid for this edition of the podcast.
So go out and awe, run,
ma. It takes a team of people to finish a race. It takes a team of people to put together a podcast. And we want to thank some of those people.
Our Patreon supporters, we appreciate their participation.
We want to thank especially our business Patreon supporter, Doug Crumley at Crumley & Associates. You can find him at DougCrumleyJr.com. He's your wealth advisor. He's the one that's going to coach you to be wealthy.
We'd like to thank our producer, Doug Mayer, and our associate producer, Ryan War.
And especially our social media expert, Yana Gibalova, who just joined us and is doing a wonderful job. Make sure you tune in to next week's episode, which is going to get deep into the science and psychology of running.
We're going to bring on Joe Yuhan to talk about the central governor, the piece inside of us that controls everything. If you want to do more, master the central governor.
So you'll want to turn to next week so you can figure out how to go beyond what you think you're capable of.